Blog Talk Radio.
Leadership has been described in many ways. In March, we pay tribute to the many. In March, we pay tribute to the many women who have toiled and labored for the benefit of whole generations who followed them. Dallas Flowers said it so well when she stated, "A good leader makes a good servant." I'm going to just cut some of this sound off for just a minute, and if you just pause with me for just a minute, I will be right with you. We're going to cut something off and start this all over again. Let's see. We will start in just a second. Just a little technical difficulties here, and that's okay. We will start this again. All right, just one second here. Let's see here. Here we go. Okay, I'm going to start this again. Leadership has been described in many ways. In March, we pay tribute to the many women who have toiled and labored for the benefit of whole generations who followed them. Dallas Flowers said it so well when she said, "A good leader makes a good servant." We feature three servant leaders on today's show, three of Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick's top women in government who lead, who serve, and who empower. These are the role models of today, the change agents who get things done and lead with vision. Hello, I am Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're in for a power-packed show today on Focus on Empowerment. Well, welcome. We're glad to have you, and sorry for those technical difficulties. The technology is always proving that we need to always do things innovatively. So thank you so much. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. I'm really excited about the guest who we have on today. We would love for you to join us on our broadcast. You can share with your friends to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/globalcarol, and that's GLOBALCAROLE, and join us. And you can also sign in to our chat room. We're always interested in the comments that can't come through with our chat room. We'd love for you to join us and have a great time. I'm really excited because we have three, again, of the powerful, powerful women who are part of the Patrick administration. We have the Secretary of Public Safety and Security, Mary Elizabeth Heffernan, and we also have the Assistant Secretary for Children, Youth, and Families with the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, Marilyn Anderson Chase, and we also have the First Assistant Deputy Legal Counsel to Governor Deval Patrick on the phone with us, Abeem Thomas. Abeem Thomas, Marilyn Anderson Chase, and Secretary Heffernan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks.
So glad to have you on today. I want to ask you first, Mary Beth Heffernan, just because the news has been abuzz with this 7-year-old young man out in Norwalk, California, who did an amazing thing. He actually went to the aid of his parents, locked his sister and himself in the bathroom, and called 911 immediately, which was the trick that was needed to get rid of the unfortunate scoundrels who were breaking into his house at gunpoint and threatening his parents. What are your thoughts about that in terms of what's happening and how we can, as parents and as grandparents, can use that in arming ourselves with public safety?
Sure. Thank you. First of all, I want to commend the young man and with what forward thinking he had to grab his younger sister and go in, as I understand the news reports, call 911 from the bathroom, and he was able to summons police, and I understand there was a good ending to that story, and it,
right.
One never wants our children or grandchildren to be in that position, but certainly he showed us a lot of bravery and preparation, which it sounds like his parents did a wonderful job of telling him to call 911,
mm-hmm.
which is always the best thing to do in any circumstance like that. And, you know, the 911 technology, you speak of technology, it's come so far since it's first been it's first begun. We have silent 911, for example, in Massachusetts now, where if you dial 911, you can't speak because of circumstances like it sounds like that young man was in,
mm-hmm.
then the police are able to determine your address and are able to come to your aid. And in Massachusetts, again, as an example, we are exploring being possibly the first state to implement next-generation 911, which will allow you to text message from your cell phone when a 911 situation warrants. For example, it was something that was talked about during the Virginia Tech situation. A lot of the students were text messaging, you know, about what was happening, and they were unable to get through to emergency responders. So
right.
911 is always the thing to do when you're in danger. And as I said, this young man sounds like a wonderful young man, and he certainly saved his family's lives.
He just seems so composed on television, knew what to say, and certainly when talking with the dispatcher, he knew how to respond to her and said, you know, bring the cops, bring lots of them, bring the soldiers on and stuff. So I was just amazed with how perceptive he was and how well he did to conduct himself on certainly on television, but certainly with how he handled the situation with when the emergency came up. I'm just always struck, and I looked at the website. I saw all the responsibilities that you have, and I also thought about, my goodness, when it comes to public safety, there's so much that we have to do as citizens and as people to be alert. I've had other shows on my broadcast where I've brought on the Red Cross, I've brought on other individuals who talk about GOPACs, and I think about how unprepared we all are in case emergencies take place. How does your office, Secretary Heffernan, deal with emergencies and preparing families for the unexpected?
Certainly, and we have, we're blessed in this state to have the Massachusetts Emergency Management, MEMA, which works out of the bunker out in Framingham, an
mm-hmm.
organization that is just at the forefront of emergency management. They're the folks to whom we go if there are emergencies that happen. They then have in place local EOCs and local emergency preparedness folks that then fan out to the cities and towns. And certainly we've had to be obviously much more prepared with the tragic events of 9/11, post 9/11, we've had to be more prepared. So we have a lot of ground up involvement from
right.
the locals that it requires coordination from the local departments of public health, the State Department of Public Health, within the State Executive Office of Public Safety and Security. It requires the local law enforcement to be involved, the state police. So there are a myriad of law enforcement and human service and other agencies that are ready to spring into action if and when an unfortunate emergency happens in Massachusetts, whether it's weather-related, whether it's in illness-related, like we saw with H1N1. Those kinds of planning and that kind of discussion is happening on a regular basis within our agency and across the Secretariat.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit and bring Marilyn Anderson Chase in the conversation, just because, again, all three of you are dealing with leadership issues and dealing with community and family and business opportunities and business challenges that affect all of us here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I know that I have guests who are listening in from other states, so you can just use these conversation points and use the conversation and the discussion that we have and apply it to your own state. Marilyn, we've known each other a long time, and you've been in this field in some form or fashion for many years. What seems to be the biggest challenge that the Office, Executive Office of Health and Human Services, is facing now in the midst of health care and educational issues, et cetera?
You know, I would say that all of the agencies of state government and all of the states across the country are experiencing the same challenges created by the current economic climate that our families are experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Within the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, we are charged with the obligation to provide critical services to the state's most vulnerable population, some of the people in our state who, many people in our state and in states across the country, have to rely on the public sector for often for shelter, for sometimes for food, for the ability to receive health care. And the fact that we are fiscally stretched, financially stretched, means that we've got fewer resources to apply and therefore have to be much more creative in our in the ways in which we try to stretch the available dollars to meet the needs of as many people as possible. So,
what's that like? When I translate to budgets, obviously, that are being discussed right now for the 2011-2012 year, when the money that you're getting from the federal government, the budget allocations that they have or they don't have, tax cuts, tax increases, how do you make decisions, and then how do you then work with end users, nonprofit organizations who are doing yeoman's job with very little money? I know it's a great balancing act. And is there a decision-making process that you use as you are allocating funds and working with the various constituents and nonprofit organizations who are needing your funds and needing your services? And this can apply to any state, anywhere in this country.
Well, there is a decision-making process that we use within the Executive Office of Health and Human Services in Massachusetts. I assume that other states have a similar decision-making process that they use. They may use different variables. But as we try to figure out how we are going to parse out scarce resources, we look at a number of variables. We certainly have, first and foremost, we want to meet our responsibility to serve those populations that are most vulnerable in our state, the populations that we are mandated to serve. We have some court orders that we are, again, mandated to implement, and we try to ensure that we've got the resources available to meet those mandated court orders. Those are two of the priority items that we use in terms of making decisions about how we're going to expend and allocate the resources that we have available. And we do have a process of engaging providers and other stakeholders in the community. I'd say that process is a process that we engage in very good faith and in recognition of the fact that our providers also have, while we have priorities that we're trying to meet, they certainly are concerned about specific segments of our population. We honor and respect that. They want to get as many resources for their segment of the population as possible. We may not always be able to honor their requests and their needs because our mandate is much broader. Mm-hmm. But we certainly listen to and try to respond as much as possible to the interests of advocates and other community-based stakeholders.
Well, we're going to continue along this lines. I'm talking to three of the top senior women in the DeVal Patrick administration here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the Secretary of Public Safety and Security, Secretary Mary Beth Heffernan, also speaking to the Assistant Secretary for Health and Human Services, Marilyn Anderson Chase, and I love this title, the first assistant deputy legal counsel to Governor Patrick, Abeam Thomas. I'm going to bring Abeam in because you've got to explain that title to me. I love that title, first assistant.
Well, Carol, I should tell you it's actually a new title. I have our fearless leader, Mo Cowan, the governor's chief legal counsel, to thank for my new title. Mm-hmm. When he came in a couple of months ago, he decided to elevate me and give me this very long, but still prestigious, I think, new title, and it's something I appreciate. But all it really means is that I, along with the rest of the governor's legal team, we work day in, day out to ensure that the governor's priorities are met. We work hand in hand with Secretary Heffernan, Assistant Secretary Marilyn Anderson Chase, and so many others in the other executive offices to ensure that the governor's work gets done.
And if you are listening to this program, we are talking to three of the top women in government, state government here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Give us a call at 646-727-2766. Let me repeat that, 646-727-2766. And if you would like to ask a question, just push 1 on your keypad. So, again, the number is 646-727-2766, and push 1 on the keypad, and we will get your question answered. Log into the chat room, and you can also engage in a lively discussion, as we did last week, about these issues that just affect us all. So can you, Abeem Thomas, give us a specific example of where your work takes you and the responsibilities that you have in this capacity as legal counsel?
Wow, that's a great question, Carol. Well, where my work takes me, I'm specifically charged with interfacing with the Executive Office of Public Safety and Security, as well as with the Executive Office of Housing and Economic Development. And I also work with the Stimulus Office as well on projects related to the stimulus project here in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And so on any given day, I'm handling issues in any one of those areas. And as I mentioned earlier, I have colleagues as well within the legal office who handle issues related to transportation, energy and environmental affairs, labor and workforce development, administration and finance, and education. I'm excited that I have Secretary Heffernan here with me, because we work hand in hand on a daily basis on any number of issues, and I'm happy to mention just a few that have been in the news recently and that represent the governor's important agendas, one of which is CORI, for example. So,
very important subject, yeah.
Criminal offender record information and the governor's CORI reform. So that bill, there's a bill that's now sitting in the House. We're waiting for movement on that, and it represents a big piece of the governor's agenda and something that we've been working very hard on.
And for those who are listening who may not know what CORI is, if you are certainly from outside of Massachusetts, Abeem, can you explain what CORI is, either
so
Abeem
again,
or Secretary Heffernan?
Sure, and I'm happy to have Secretary Heffernan jump in at any point. But as I mentioned before, CORI stands for Criminal Offender Record Information. So this is basically your criminal record. This is a record that can follow you for a very long time, absent any reform, which is what we're working on. Right now, if you have a felony on your record, that will stay on your record for 15 years.
Wow.
If you have a misdemeanor on your record, that will stay on your record for 10 years. The governor's reform package, as I mentioned, that's sitting in the House right now and that we're waiting for some movement on, is working to reduce that time for felonies from 15 years to 10 years and for misdemeanors from 10 years to 5 years to work with people with criminal records to get them back out there, to get them rehabilitated, and to get them back into society where they can work and live and become, you know, useful and active members.
And again, the impact on this is for so many who have committed a crime, they paid their dues, they did their time, to be able to get a decent job, they're affected because of the CORI policies that they have now, and with some employers who will simply see the past deeds of that particular potential applicant will be certainly put on the back burner, and that definitely affects people and how they work.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I'll add to Abeem's great explanation just to say that the governor, you know, has been involved in reforming the CORI system since he took office. And, you know, he recognized after listening to people across the state and in this area that we can't just fix the system that we have now in place. It has too many moving parts, it's too cumbersome. It requires, for example, people to go into the courthouse that they may have been convicted from to seal their record. It's a very unwieldy process. So he decided, you know, what we need to do is reform the whole system, kind of blow it up and take an approach that's more proactive. This new system, if it's passed by the House, will be web-based. It will, as Abeem mentioned, it will only deal, let employers see open cases and convictions that are older than 10 years old in the case of a felony and 5 years in the case of a misdemeanor. It will also put some ownership back on, because the governor thinks of CORE as a jobs bill, okay?
Right.
It will put the onus back on the person who has criminal history to kind of keep in touch. So if that person is out and really trying to apply for a job and make themselves, a contributing member of society, they then will be able to log on to this new system and see who's looking at their CORE, for example, and say, hey, you know what, I didn't apply at this place, or who's this person looking at my CORE? Then there'll be a place, a board within the State Office of Criminal Record Information Management that will look at that complaint and say, you're right, someone should not have accessed your information. It will
so
give
it gives
a little
that
bit
person,
of
a... It gives that person protection and sort of a defense process for him or her to sort of push back, if in fact their records are being used to his or her disadvantage.
I think you're right, and that's the purpose of it, and that's what the governor heard mostly was from people that felt as though it was a very cumbersome kind of, you know, anonymous process that they felt they had no involvement in. They couldn't understand, kind of the speak that came out of the Criminal History Systems Board, the data that told about the person's record. It was just a very daunting process, and if you're trying to find a job, you know, one more barrier like this is really not necessary. So hopefully, the idea that the governor had will be pushed through before the legislature goes out of session this summer, and we're looking forward to working with them on that.
One more question.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I ask you one more? I'm going to jump in about Abeem, who, and she mentioned Mo Cowan, who's the governor's legal counsel, whom we love working with. And I'll give him a credit, because we're talking about Women's Month. We poo-poo titles, you know, and we act as though they're not a big thing, but they are a big thing. And I think they're a big thing for women specifically, because I think that it shows that you have risen to a certain level, and we should be proud of that. And I think it's a recognition on Mo's behalf, a man, who shows, you know, how much he thinks of Abeem, that, you know, he's giving some structure to the office, but also recognizing that titles are important in our world. And I just didn't want that remark to go unnoticed.
And so that validates and gives more credibility to the first assistant deputy piece in your title. Is that not true, Abeem Thomas?
Thank you, Carol, and thank you, Mary Beth.
I want to go back. Just one more question I wanted to ask, because I know it differs from state to state. But with someone who has committed a felony here in Massachusetts and they serve their time, are they able then to go back and vote as a productive citizen in our Commonwealth?
Absolutely.
Good.
The only people that can't vote are people that are incarcerated currently.
Who are currently incarcerated.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great, great. I want to pull Marilyn Anderson Chase in the conversation and ask you, is there a hot project that your department with Health and Human Services, I know that Judy Ann Bigby is the secretary in your agency, is there a hot project that you're currently nursing, working on, that we citizens of Massachusetts should really know about?
Well, we have... I'm trying to parcel through the projects.
Okay.
Healthcare reform and all of the work related to healthcare reform certainly for Massachusetts is an ongoing issue. Ensuring that as many citizens in the Commonwealth as possible have access to healthcare reform, we are currently building on that by looking to put into place the design of healthcare services into something that is known as medical home. It's a system, a network of ensuring that people have access to services in their local community through a provider who is connected to all of the other kinds of medical providers and services that they might need in their local community. I'd say probably the biggest thing that we're working on right now is probably, again, a continuation of ensuring that people have access to healthcare services.
And how does that relate to, again, for those who are listening or who will be listening to this this broadcast and this program later on, we know that Massachusetts was the first state to adopt and formally put into practice universal health care per se, but we also know that the rates are going up. So does your agency have anything to do with sort of monitoring the rate increases that insurance companies are leveraging with the various policies that are out there, and how will that be improved going forward?
Yeah, that actually rests within the Division of Insurance, which is not within the Executive Office of Health and Human Services. Certainly, the cost of health insurance and the cost of the delivery of health care services is something that is of interest to us. Our agencies don't work solely independently of one another. We work as much as possible collaboratively on these issues, so it's something that we're interested in and engaged in. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, Judy Ann Bigby, is very much connected to these issues and is working on them aggressively, but that particular issue falls within the purview of the Division of Insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're all keeping our eyes and ears on that, certainly not just in this state, but around the country. We certainly hope that something will be done in Congress regarding a national health care bill between what the House of Representatives and the Senate will do in terms of passing a Senate bill and then bringing that forward for reconciliation. That's obviously what we're all thinking and looking at, because it will have an impact on what takes place here in Massachusetts. So are you looking at that with a fine-tooth comb at this point in terms of what's being done? And how will a national bill impact what happens here in Massachusetts, Marilyn Anderson Chase?
Well, as you have indicated, Massachusetts was a forerunner in the country in embracing a health care reform package that has resulted in access to health insurance for over 98% of our population. And we have been very instrumental in influencing or attempting to influence the result of the national health insurance, health reform discussion. I guess I'd say it sort of depends on how we are expecting that it will not significantly impact our own health care reform efforts. Though we are looking at, though we continue to follow it carefully.
Right, right. There's a question here that's come from one of our listeners in the chat room that pertains to our conversation about health care. And the question is, the medical home focus and access is awesome. Massachusetts is usually ahead of many health initiatives. Tell me, will the health initiatives include technology interfaces that will provide another venue for consumers to access health information? I guess I'll throw that first to you, Marilyn Anderson Chase.
Yeah, we currently are working on looking at, I know within the executive office, you're asking me questions that are outside of my direct purview, so I have some knowledge and information about them, but probably not as in-depth as would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But we are certainly looking at health IT access. That is how we implement, again, as part of our healthcare reforms, how we implement access to healthcare information using a healthcare database as the how do we use technology to better provide access to healthcare. Again, it's one of those things that we are actively engaged in.
You know, it's not in my secretariat, but I'll certainly jump in and say that outside,
sure.
I cover in the Executive Office of Public Safety and Security, we cover the Department of Corrections, and we don't get paid for covering inmates' care, but certainly technology is an important piece for cutting costs and providing efficient services for inmates that are incarcerated in Massachusetts. For example, implementing telemedicine where possibly inmates could take advantage of a doctor off-site. The University of Massachusetts Medical Center provides the medical care for inmates and offenders in Massachusetts. So, you know, using e-records so that they can follow inmates as they go from maybe the county system to the state system, and then hopefully when they re-enter society, they would go to their local, perhaps, community health center with a record or some sort of information that had followed them through their incarceration while they weren't out on the street. So absolutely, Massachusetts is looking very carefully at whatever technology provisions may be in the health care bill, and we're looking outside of the, you know, normal, perhaps, boundaries that you're speaking about.
Right.
I know that many of us are anxious to see some action in Washington.
Hmm. And I'm sure that if anything is implemented here in the Commonwealth that has statewide implications, Abeem Thomas, with your position, you would probably look that over in terms of the legalities of it or litigation issues. How would your role, how would you play a part in, let's say, the enhancement of technology with medical records?
Yeah, Carol, great question. The governor's legal office plays a role in virtually every initiative within the executive. And so if something like that did come, and again, we're always open to new ideas and efficiencies that are created by technology, but that's definitely something that that we would review. Mo Cowan, in his role overseeing the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, would take a very close look at that and make sure to review it, not just for its legal implications, but also for its policy and political implications.
Hmm. Well, we're going to continue our conversation, but we're going to just pause for just a few minutes. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and thank you so much for listening to Focus on Empowerment. We have dynamic guests on. We're dealing with women at the top who are giving us important information that's impacting not just Massachusetts, but air goes Massachusetts. The rest of the country certainly can follow on. We want to pause just a few minutes to pay tribute to African-American and women historians and innovators in our country's history. And as this program grows and expands, we're going to continue to have these tributes and look at people around the world, because we know that we'll have worldwide listeners to Focus on Empowerment going forward. But let's stop and pause and look back a little bit to a wonderful human being who did an awful lot for our transportation system and to produce companies as we see now with Amtrak. His fascination with steam engines would mark his place in history. Born in Canada in the 1840s to escape slaves, Elijah McCoy studied engineering in Scotland before immigrating to the U.S. to find work. When racism pushed him to low-level railroad jobs, he used that experience to invent a lubricator that oiled engines and train locomotives without stopping the machinery. That phrase, the real McCoy, soon caught on after his invention became wildly popular in the middle 1800s as the expression people used for the best equipment available. Elijah McCoy, visionary innovator of the Black History Trail of Success. And we pay tribute to Elijah McCoy, and now you know the rest of that story. And there's so many others, and we look at men and women, certainly in railroading with companies like Amtrak and others. And so we're going to continue to bring you those kind of tributes going forward. We're having a great conversation in the chat room. That's what I love about innovative and technology and this form of radio dialogue. I was on terrestrial radio for 11 years. I'm getting railroad and radio mixed up. I was on terrestrial radio for a number of years, but I love this innovative technology, because we have a whole conversation piece going on here in the chat room. We invite you to join the chat room, and if you're just listening as a guest, that is fabulous. We would love for you to think about becoming a regular listener of Blog Talk Radio. All you have to do, it's free of charge. You can just go and sign up as a listener so that when you enter the chat room, you'll be able to talk with me and talk with the guests if you don't want to go on the air with your question. So we are very thankful that the IDEA coach said, I have observed that the CDC has a great foothold on doing these technology strides, going back to our technology conversation. I am convinced that Massachusetts will take the lead, and I am in New Jersey and know about your great health initiatives. Thanks so much. So we thank you for your comments. Stepping back into our conversation with three top women, Beam Thomas, she is the first assistant deputy legal counsel for Governor Deval Patrick here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and the Assistant Secretary for Children, Youth, and Families at the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, Marilyn Anderson Chase, and the Secretary for Public Safety and Security, Mary Beth Heffernan. Thank you all for being guests on my program, and I know you ladies are very busy, so I really appreciate you being with us for the entire hour on our show, Focus on Empowerment. When I look at the roles that you have, I'll just maybe go on a roll first with the Beam and then Marilyn and then Mary Beth. Beam, how do you take care of all the responsibilities that are on your shoulders, knowing that you're under the microscope? There are not that many women in senior positions in state government anywhere. So with you being under the microscope, being a woman, how do you balance it all? How do you deal with your personal life with all the responsibilities that you have in state government?
What personal life, Carol?
Uh-oh. Oh, my goodness.
No, I'm kidding. It is a challenge, but I think it's about just being very organized, about being very dedicated and caring a lot about what we do and who we're doing it for at the end of the day. Governor Deval Patrick is incredibly inspiring, and I know that I speak for myself and I can speak for the other women here and so many members of his team to say we wouldn't come in every day and work as hard as we do if it weren't for him and for his great leadership and his great vision. So that makes the job so much easier. Makes it a lot easier to tackle, and we just stay organized, and we all rely on a great team. I rely on a great team of lawyers. I've already mentioned my leader, Mo Cowan, the governor's chief counsel, but I'd also like to take the opportunity to give a shout out to the other lawyers in the office who help me every day to get the work done, and that's Mark Riley, Carrie Wicker, and Liz Nadzo, who work alongside with me every day to get the governor's legal work done.
What decision did you go through? I looked at your bio, very impressive bio, Harvard College, 1996, Georgetown Law School. You certainly, like Barack Obama, could have gone anywhere you wanted, and you certainly could be making a bundle of money in a private law firm. Why state government? Why the direction and the path that you've gone?
Wow, that is a great question from you, Carol. I get it from people every day, and we don't like to talk about the money. We like to talk about the service. And when I was working at my previous job at a law firm in private practice, I got a call one day to come and serve the governor in this role. And for me, it was, the dream job and just the job of a lifetime. And everyone who I talked to about it said, you know what, you can't pass this up. This is the opportunity of a lifetime, and things like this don't come around very often. And it's the opportunity to serve the citizens of the Commonwealth. And you know what, that's priceless to me. And I think I had former colleagues who I would joke about with. We said we would do this job for free.
Wow.
Don't tell anybody. Sorry, I'm a little older than a Beam. I don't know that I'd do it for free.
Oh, I think your sister colleagues there don't want to hear that at all.
There was a time when I think we would have done it for free as well. I think we have evolved. That's a good word. I certainly would echo everything that Abima said.
Yeah.
This is actually my my second go-round in state government,
right.
And I came back to state after having spent some time in private sector. I came back to state government for exactly the same reasons that Abeam did. I was very much inspired by the governor's leadership. And in addition to being inspired by the governor's leadership, I also very much welcomed the opportunity, embraced the opportunity to work with and under the leadership of one of the other senior women in leadership positions in the governor's cabinet, Dr. Judy Ann Bigby, who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Mary Beth is one of three women who serve in the governor's cabinet, that is,
right.
who report directly to the governor.
Right.
Dr. Bigby, as Secretary of Health and Human Services, is in her own right an extraordinary woman. And in addition to looking forward with great enthusiasm to the opportunity of working with the governor, I also look forward to the opportunity to work with her and have been blessed to work with a remarkable team of people who work tirelessly on behalf of the citizens of the Commonwealth. You know, I would also agree with Abeam that though I have been at this a bit longer, I think you have to very consciously work at maintaining some balance in your life. You very consciously have to build in personal time, time for yourself, in order to achieve all of the work that you need to do and sort of and very realistically maintain your sanity.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you'd say that because I go back to the original comment that the quote that was given earlier by Dallas Flowers, who Marilyn Anderson Chase, you and I both know Dallas Flowers, and I just love this. She said, a good leader makes a good servant, and you truly are servant leaders. And just to shift the conversation just a bit, Secretary Heffernan, you have children. You have two children. I don't know if they're adult children or certainly.
Oh, no. Sadly, no. I have no life because I have a teenager. So
oh,
there's
boy.
That. Yeah. No, I'm delighted. I have two great kids. One is 17 and one is going to be 11 next week. A boy, my son Finn is 17 and my daughter will be 11, Una, next week. And as I echo my colleagues here, I mean, you have to try to figure out a balance. My children are wonderfully forgiving most of the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that I'm a single parent, but I'm not the only person who's raising them. I mean,
okay.
I've got wonderful support systems and, you know, my parents and friends and babysitters and so forth. So, but you're right. I mean, it's a challenge trying to figure out how to balance things. My job takes me out on weekends often. If there is something that happens over the weekend, I need
right.
to go. I was just up in Gloucester, Massachusetts, with the governor a couple of weeks ago, and we had something that had was not foreseen, which was a terrible wind gust up in the North Shore that blew the roof off two motels in the area. So
right.
we were touring that. So I often do that, but you know, it works. And as Abeam and Marilyn both said, this governor and this lieutenant governor are. People that I just emulate so much. It's also my second time around in state government, and I worked for a woman back in the 80s, the first woman chair of Senate Ways and Means, Patricia McGovern, who was a state senator from Lawrence, Massachusetts. And so I know, you know, I know good leaders, and these men that we work for now are good leaders. And as Abeam said it best, you know, they make it easy for us to juggle all the things that we do so that we can do the best job that we have to do. And I also have a great team. Secretary Kevin Burke was my predecessor. He assembled a great team at the beginning of this administration, and I'm honored that that team has stayed on with me as I've taken over the role of secretary.
Well,
so
I'm really
fun.
Hearing from you, Secretary Heffernan, and certainly from the wisdom of Marilyn Anderson Chase and the effervescent vision of Abeam Thomas, you are servant leaders. You know you want to call. You want to certainly deal with the importance of state governance and with the responsibilities that you have within your respective agencies. But you have to have a life outside of government. What I'm hearing is the connection that you have, the support system certainly that you have, Mary Beth Heffernan, with family members and others. I can remember years ago, my children are grown now, but I can remember the struggle that I had as a businesswoman in traveling, and I had to travel. I'm a speaker. People hired me. I had to go to New Orleans, to California to speak. That's how I make a living in part of my business. And I had these mother guilts with even though I would pack lunches and I'd, you know, fix five meals and wash clothes and have five pages of instructions when I left my then older teenage children home. And I realized that I was stressing myself out. My kids knew what I was doing. They knew that I had to work. And they were not concerned as I was concerned that they were being neglected, because they weren't being neglected, and certainly there was a support system. Do you find that you have those kind of guilt regardless of whether you have biological children, but certainly just the responsibilities that you have outside of your job? Marilyn, let me ask you that question. How have you dealt with just this balancing act and sort of pushing off the guilt?
Well, you know, as you know, my daughter is older and on her own, and she probably is listening, so I'll say that she's a wonderful daughter. But I was in the unique situation of my husband was worked for a news organization, was
right.
A news photographer. So for years, we were like ships passing in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
His work schedule and my work schedule meant that we saw each other on weekends and, you know, kind of and literally passing like ships in the dark during the week. So I didn't feel as guilty, There wasn't the same level of guilt. He's now retired. I feel a little bit more guilty. So I have learned that as long as I make certain that he has meals, that he gets dinner every day, that he's happy.
Okay.
And as long as he lays eyes on me at least once during the day, he's okay. Yeah.
Abeem, what about your situation? I gather you're a young professional and you have a lot ahead of you. How are you sort of managing this balancing act with the responsibilities that you have as the first deputy, assistant deputy?
Unlike Marilyn and Mary Beth, I don't have any children, but I love talking as Mary Beth just said.
Right.
But I love sitting with women like Mary Beth and Marilyn, because it really inspires me and gives me hope. And I do want to have kids one day, and it makes me believe that I can do it.
Yes.
And I think it's great to have examples out there of such accomplished women who really have done it all. So it's a part of my life that I look forward to adding to, and I hope I'm able to balance it as well as they have once I do.
Well, you know, I think
Carol, sounds like you had kids that were that understood what was going on. You know, I think it's really good for your children to see you doing this. I really do. I mean,
yeah.
Your children see that you can, you know, you contribute in a meaningful way. Certainly, odd jobs are very, you know, demanding, but they're also they contribute, and my children see that daily, and they need to learn that they need to balance too, and you've got to balance, and you've got to figure out how to cope a lot of times. You've got to cope with all different types of people, and you have to kind of manage that, and it is manageable, and
right.
I think it's important to show children that as well, for women and mothers.
Right. I think what you're all saying, and in my chat room, people are really following what you're saying. They're saying this is a great session, and Idea Coach is saying young women should really participate and listen to this broadcast, because it is a struggle, and we're technologically advanced, and we're dealing with lots of issues, but you still have to make sure somebody is feeding the family at home, or somebody is taking care of watering the plants or whatever, and it is a real struggle. But what I found with my kids is they knew what I was doing. They knew that the work was related to their home that they were living in, the food that they and all of that was a part of the family dynamic. So instead of resentment, they would do what they could to encourage me. And I'll never forget my late son when I was, again, packing, going away somewhere, and just stressing out about leaving again. He said, you know, Mom, you are a business owner. You are an entrepreneur, and this is a part of what you do. So that eased my guilt conscience, and it let me know that, no, the resentment is not there. I have to learn how to balance and to share my work with my family so that they always know what I'm doing, and that's what I've always tried to do.
Yeah. I actually, when my daughter was younger, she now is on her own and has a grown son, nearly grown son. But when they were each younger, both my daughter and my grandson, I frequently would take them out with me to meetings and other events in the evening so that they were exposed to the work. They have each learned from their parents the sort of this work ethic.
Right.
That says that you put in the time that you have to put in to do a really good job,
mm-hmm.
But I think they also learn from us that you also set time aside to enjoy life, to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about learning, doing a good job, doing it well, being focused on a productive outcome, but also intentionally scheduling some time for yourself.
Right. In the remaining minutes that we have, and this has been such a great conversation, if you were to look at women within state government and women who are in the private sector and women who are listening to this broadcast, either live or listening to it as a download, as a podcast, Abeam Thomas, what advice would you give, what words of pearls of wisdom would you give based on the hard knocks that you've had? I've always said people, anybody can lead when times are good. But I think the lessons come through when times are tough and you've had to really face yourself and stare yourself in the mirror and figure out a way out of your circumstances. In the life experiences that you've had, Abeam, what advice can you share with the women who are listening during Women's History Month based on you facing yourself and facing your own obstacles?
Well, great question, and I'm glad you're starting with me as sort of the youngest among the bunch, because the others will have much more wisdom, I'm sure, to impart. But, you know, you mentioned a life of hard knocks, and it's hard to even think of it that way because I feel so blessed to have had the opportunities that I have had. Even if it's meant working hard, it's something that I look forward to every day. But for me, it's been about organization and prioritization. I think, you know, every day you have to tackle a large volume of things, and it's just a matter of putting them all in order, figuring out which one is most important and tackling that one first to make sure that the day doesn't end without you taking care of everything that you need to handle. So those are just my two pieces of advice. I'm sure Marilyn and Mary Beth will have many more.
Great.
I think I would add to that, Carol, that I've also been very blessed over the course of my career, not just here, but over the course of my career to have been involved in work that I thoroughly and completely enjoyed. I have, you talked about being a servant leader. I have felt that the work that I've been involved in has very much allowed me to be a public servant, mm-hmm. whether I was in the public sector or the private sector. And that's meant that even when the challenges come, I've looked forward to just about, I won't say every single day, but just about every single day that I've worked. I don't think I have ever had a day of work that I've absolutely regretted. I think that when the challenges come, knowing that you are engaged in work that you absolutely love and enjoy makes it easier to make it through those challenges. And I think also knowing that we can't do everything. We are not miracle workers. There are we certainly are bound to do our best at everything we do. And I think as long as I can go to bed at night knowing that I have made the best effort and done the best that I can, and that I'm going to get up the next day and try again to do the very best that I can, I think there's great reward in that.
There is. I'll just chime in by,
sure,
echoing both of my colleagues, but I'll tell you that, look at the folks at the governor. Look at these two women that are here with me. The governor has put together a team that includes many women that are wonderful people to work with. They're all ages. They're all stripes. They're all different backgrounds, and they're a great group of people. And you know what? I'm blessed as well. I have a great family that takes public service very seriously, so that I'm able to contribute as much as I can. And I just love coming to work every day too. I'm honored to work with women such as these two and within this administration.
I think all of you have hit on the importance of loving your job or loving your profession, loving what you're doing, so that you don't get caught up in obviously the long hours, which I'm sure all of you put in, the weekend activities that you talked about, Secretary Heffernan. You love what you're doing. This whole concept of public service is something that sticks with you and makes a lot of sense. How can you translate, how can you share that message with someone right now who is in between and is looking maybe at public servants, becoming a public servant and working in government, or maybe making a change within the nonprofit community or the educational industry or in private business? What advice would you share with somebody who is just about to make those kind of shifts?
You know, I think you have to clearly examine yourself and be real honest and candid with yourself about what drives you and what you most enjoy doing. And then I think you have to be willing to follow your passion. I mean, none of us has talked about income yet.
Yeah.
but I'd be willing, based on my own experience,
mm-hmm.
I'd be willing to wager that I'd be willing to wager that each of us took a cut in salary in coming here. I certainly can say this. We all could make much more money in the private sector than we currently earn.
Right.
That's not what drives us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the income isn't what drives us. What drives us is the work. And I think people who are trying to decide what they do next have to be real honest and real candid with themselves about what drives them, what motivates them, what is of most interest to them. And I would say that you work best in environments where you are engaged in work that meets your passion.
And I'd also, I want to echo what Marilyn just said, but also the ability to have an impact on real people every day. And I know we haven't had a chance to talk much about the governor's efforts related to Haiti relief, but I know that's something that Marilyn worked on, and I can only imagine that she has countless stories about individuals who probably came to her looking for help.
Right.
I know I've talked to specific people who we've been able to help individually because of the positions that we're in and how blessed we are every day to be able to work for them and to affect change for them. And so that's incredibly meaningful, and anyone looking at public service has got to know what a great honor it is and what a great feeling it is to be able to say, today I changed someone's life.
Hey, you're really talking about direct service and direct service to people in the Commonwealth, direct service or service that ultimately impacts people around the country, and service that definitely impacts people around the globe. I've traveled. You ladies have also traveled. You women have traveled. I'm amazed at the connections that people have with Massachusetts who don't live in Massachusetts, whether they're in California, whether they are in Florida, whether they are in El Salvador, in Kenya, where I've been and worked, just the connections with the state are important. And who better to see that than those of you women, who we have interviewed today, looking at those important responsibilities and how you connect with people. The passion is definitely there. I hear it in your voice. I hear it in the experiences that you have, and enjoying the work, and you certainly have exhibited that. I have enjoyed the interviews today during Women's History Month. We have interviewed the Secretary of Public Safety and Security, Mary Beth Heffernan. We also have We've interviewed the Assistant Secretary for Children, Youth and Families, Marilyn Anderson Chase, and I just love this title, the First Assistant Deputy Legal Counsel to Governor DeVal Patrick, E. Abram Thomas. Thank you all for being guests on my program. You were fabulous. I wish all of you well, and you've given us a lot of insight of your jobs and what you're doing and the important roles that you play within state government and certainly the leader you are. Thank you so much, listeners, for being on my show today. Share the word, spread the word that we are on Internet Radio, Blog Talk Radio. Come back and listen to our program. Next week we'll be in Minneapolis, Minnesota, live at the Multicultural Forum Broadcasting, and our special guest is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Connie Schultz, and we'll also interview Bill Wells with the Multicultural Forum and others. So we have a fantastic show coming up next week. Thank you all so much for being my guests.
Thank you, Carol.